Well, hello, greetings, and welcome. Welcome back to The Collector's Show. I'm Harold Nickel, back after a week off, and I'll have a little bit more to say about the whys of that before too much longer. First, let you know who's in the interview segment. It's Daniel Pickett, and Daniel is an expert in toy collecting, action figure collecting. He is just back from the 111th Toy Fair International Trade Show in New York City, and he has a lot to tell us about what's happening in the world of not just action figures, but all different types of toys, and it's just fun talking to Daniel. You'll enjoy that. We'll also do the news, but let me just say a quick word about why we were off last week, and I guess in terms of technology, I just got to the tipping point when we did the show about Asia Week New York. The problem and challenges that I've been having with the telephone company could go into a novel or a graphic novel where no one is the hero. And I got to that point when I was listening to that interview segment, and the problem with the audio was that it would come across the line and it was very scratchy, and it would sound like somebody was just right up on the phone. And as often as I would ask folks, and they were always nice enough to try to distance themselves from their telephone, there were some times when that just didn't help at all. And so we'd get interviews where the audio quality was very good, and others where it just was barely intelligible. And then the interview with Carol talking about Asia Week New York, and it was so hard when I was interviewing her to try to, you know, turn knobs to turn her down, and it was just more than I could stand. So and for that matter, it wasn't fair to anybody that the quality of the audio was such that it was just too much work to try and listen. And this is supposed to be fun and not work for all of us. So I spent the week putting in a Skype system, and our interviews are now going to be done via Skype. And they have some places where they're kind of, computery sounding. But I think what you're going to hear with Daniel's interview is that the quality is pretty remarkable, particularly in comparison to some of the other audio that I've done lately. So if you missed the show last week, thanks for understanding. And I think we are headed into a new age, a renaissance, if you will, of better audio. So that's what happened. Here is the news from the world of collecting. Collectors Universe certified its 50 millionth collectible. And in case you didn't know, Collectors Universe is a leading provider of value-added authentication and grading services. They work for dealers and individual collectors, and they specialize in high-value collectibles. And back the end of February, the 26th to be exact, they announced that they had certified their 50 millionth item. They started out in 1986 and graded 18,000 coins in their first month of business, and have now reached a 50 million collectible milestone. So congratulations to the folks at Collectors Universe. Well, it had to happen. Where art and sport and collectability and sex appeal and controversy all collided on the cover of Sports Illustrated magazine, the Sports Illustrated Barbie swimsuit issue is said to be the next big thing in collecting, both for Barbie aficionados, people who collect SI, and how could we not talk about that here on The Collector's Show? Because the coming together of the Barbie doll and Sports Illustrated's annual swimsuit edition united once and for all two iconic American brands. Barbie's appearance in Sports Illustrated celebrates the 50th anniversary edition of the famous and popular swimsuit issue. You'll remember from 5, 6, 7 years ago that we did a 50th anniversary thing on Barbie when she turned 50. So courting younger icons, I guess, in her golden years. Her appearance doesn't hurt the toy marketplace because in the milestone issue, Barbie is shown wearing her black and white swimsuit from 1959. It's very recognizable and stylish, and Barbie aficionados everywhere will dig it. The meeting of these two American brands has, as you might guess, caused quite a stir among those who say Barbie and Sports Illustrated both portray an unrealistic female body image to young girls. Probably. But, you know, the audience for Sports Illustrated isn't young girls. And honestly, realistically, you know, nobody is shaped like that. We're going to talk later in the show about pop vinyl, and trust me, nobody is basing their body image on those. So, in the world of controversy, kind of silly. It's part of Mattel's effort to extend the Barbie brand into many new ways. They've been at this lately. They want to keep the doll current and relevant to a generation of American girls who are just a little bit more tech savvy. Although you'll hear Daniel talk about in the interview segment the fact that tactile toys, three-dimensional things that kids actually play with are still popular. In a more serious story, a man whose name is Michael Romano was sentenced to 20 years for scamming elderly people in a collectible coin scam. He's from Levittown, Pennsylvania, and he was sentenced to 20 years in federal prison for cheating mostly elderly customers in all 50 states out of more than $9 million. It was part of a coin fraud scheme, according to law enforcement officials. Michael Romano is 47 years old, and he was convicted of conspiracy to commit mail and wire fraud and money laundering in connection with a telemarketing scheme. He operated for 11 years out of three Long Island companies. Romano's salesman used high-pressure tactics to defraud 1,450 victims by selling them supposedly rare coins at vastly inflated prices. The judge who sentenced him was Sterling Johnson out of Brooklyn, New York, and he also ordered Romano to repay his victims more than $9 million and to forfeit $32.2 million in gains this scheme made for him. So, we've talked, albeit not lately, about crime associated with collecting, mostly about counterfeits. If somebody's trying to pressure you or a loved one into buying some overpriced collectible, it's probably fraud, and you should probably be in touch with law enforcement. A happier story, also related to coins, gold coins were found buried in California and will likely appear at a collector's show. They were buried on property located in the state of California, rare and in mint condition. These gold coins were found buried and could make an appearance in Atlanta for a collector's show later in the month. Now, this was their lucky day. The coins were found by a Northern California couple out walking their dog on their property, and they literally stumbled across this bonanza $10 million in rare mint condition gold coins buried in the shadow of an old tree. And you got to wonder what leprechaun is missing those. The Associated Press said all, or nearly all, of the 1,427 coins dating from 1847 to 1894 were uncirculated and in mint condition. So, and the irony of this is that I was just out walking my dog, and we didn't find anything. We still had fun, but, you know, we didn't discover some leprechaun's end of the rainbow gold coin collection. So that's the news from the world of collecting. As always, you can see these and many, many other stories on the Collector's Show website, and it's just collectorsshow.net. I'll double check that at the end to make sure I got it right. And it's Collector's Show with two S's. So, Daniel Pickett, also known as Julius Marx, next on the Collector's Show here on Web Talk Radio. I'm Harold Nickel. Well, those of you who've been listening to the Collector's Show since it started last August are going to remember this name, Daniel Pickett, who also has probably the best nickname I've ever heard, Julius Marx. He's been around toys his whole life. He's going to be with us this week talking about collecting toys, action figures, and more specifically what he learned and saw at an enormous toy fair in the last couple of weeks. And Daniel, welcome back to the Collector's Show.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back.
So, your nickname, Julius Marx, probably the coolest nickname ever. And tell us how you came by that handle.
Well, this goes back to the way, way early days of the internet, back when we were all getting like thousands of those actual discs in all our magazines in the mail for America Online. You know, back in the day, you had to access the internet, you had to sign into some sort of service, and AOL was kind of one of the big ones. And at that time, I had just done a play where I played Groucho Marx, and so I had done a lot of research about the Marx Brothers and his family. So when I was signing up for AOL, and I knew I was going to be writing about toys and stuff, and the internet was still kind of the Wild West, you know, a brave new world, I didn't want to use my real name, so I was trying to find something that was Marx Brothers based. And I originally was trying to do some Groucho names, but, you know, everything was taken. It would come back and, you know, Groucho 712146 or something. I didn't want that. So Julius Marx was Groucho's given name, his birth name. So I've sort of been known as that, because that's when I started writing for another site originally. I wrote under the name Julius Marx, and there's still actually people that call me Julius on the street and when I see them at shows and stuff, so it's kind of stuck with me.
That's a great way to pick a name. I've had similar experiences, not with AOL, but with trying to get a personalized license plate, and it just doesn't work, so I just go with whatever they've got. But toys, and this event you went to, I was looking on your website. And but before we get too far into that, tell us about the event and what you attended and what and who it was for.
Okay. So this was the 111th Toy Fair International, which is a trade show, actually. It's not a convention. So it is for invited attendees only, and it is primarily people who make toys and then the buyers. So, and it's not just, you know, the big box buyers like the Amazons and the Walmarts and the Targets. It's on down to all the mom-and-pop shops, comic book stores, direct market things. And it is a wide range of stuff at this. It is not just action figures. It is dolls. It is costumes. It's educational toys. It's Christmas decorations. I mean, it was – this year I think they say it was 7 football fields worth of booths, displays, toys, and the like. So it was a massive show this year.
And I guess go ahead.
It's held in New York in February. I think I've been going 11 years now. I think this is my 11th year going. So it's changed a lot over time, but still a lot of fun just to be, you know, immersed in that much toy and energy and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm afraid that if I were plunked down in something like that, that my head might explode. It And as somebody who, you know, isn't I'm not of the age where I'm buying a lot of toys anymore, I'm pleasantly surprised to learn that people still have toys that they play with, like the kinds of toys that I played with when I was growing up. It isn't just electronics or video games and things like that. There are still things that kids have tactile and three-dimensional experiences with.
Certainly.
So you're a very important opinion leader in the toy biz, and what did you see in those galleries in those 7 football fields worth of material that you think collectors should know about?
Well, it's interesting. One of the big trends that just started is, it's tough to say that retro is a new thing, because we've been seeing that for a long time. But there's a new retro in that they are trying to make toys now in the style of what a lot of us grew up with in the 70s. So we've seen sort of a resurgence of the 8-inch cloth figure, which was sort of, what people think of as a Mego figure. They did the world's greatest superheroes, but they also did, you know, Chips and the Waltons and Wizard of Oz. So those had been around for a while, and they're continuing. But at Comic-Con 2 years ago, we saw a company called Super 7, which was primarily, they did a lot of vinyl and a lot of T-shirts. They started a spinoff within their own company called Reaction, where their first products were, it had been discovered that Kenner, which is the company that made the Star Wars figures,
right,
that everyone went crazy for back in the day, they had made prototypes for the 1979 movie Alien that were never released. They did release a 12-inch figure and like a board game and then like a Target thing, but they also made 3¾-inch figures for the movie, and the prototypes and some hard copies exist out there. Well, Super 7 went and found people that had those hard copies and studied them, and they had some of them laser scanned, and then some of them they had to re-sculpt from, you know, the images that are out there. And they put out a series of these 5 figures from Alien that Kenner was going to do, and it's in that same sort of 5-point of articulation, 3¾-inch scale. And it went like gangbusters. I mean, people went bananas for these things. And Super 7 went so far as to really theme a lot of their stuff towards the idea of what would Kenner have done. So, you know, it's a very famous story that when the Star Wars figures, Star Wars came out, there were no figures for it. And so Kenner sold that early bird kit, mm-hmm, where, you know, you basically got an envelope that you could wrap and put under the Christmas tree with the promise of, as soon as we make these things, you get them first. So Super 7 did that at Comic-Con just this past year. They sold an early bird kit that looked a lot like the old Kenner one, that had like a stand and some stickers and stuff in it, and then saying that when these figures are due, you'll get them first. And then they also made, just for Comic-Con, their exclusive, was a what they call a salesman sample. So they were just 2 of the figures cast in blue plastic in a little box with this fake letter saying, oh, you know, we've seen this movie, we think it's going to be great, I think everyone's going to want these in their stores. You know, here's the alien and the guy in the spacesuit, they're going to be great space friends. You know, just kind of that 70s way of thinking. So they really paid a lot of attention to detail. So they announced all that and sold that at Comic-Con. And then just shortly after Comic-Con, Funko, which is a company that's known, they were famous originally for doing bobbleheads, and then started sort of veering into new territory with their pop vinyl and some of their blind box stuff. They thought it was such a great idea that they teamed up with Super 7 and kind of bought the idea away from them. And so they took over Reaction, and they started, you know, they already have a ton of licenses in their stable because of their pop vinyl that they're able to do. And so they started creating a lot more figures in this Reaction line things that never got figures, like Joss Whedon's Firefly show. We're getting some new ones from The Goonies. We're getting Terminator and Predator and all this stuff in the style of those old 70s Kenner, 70s and 80s Kenner figures, that 3¾-inch, 5 points of articulation scale. And there's some other companies that are starting to do that too. Biff Bang Pow showed off, they're doing Twilight Zone figures in that style and scale. There's another company called Zyka that's doing the $6 Million Man that just came out in that same sort of style and scale. So that when I say retro, it's not just retro properties, but it's doing things sort of in the old school way where the likenesses are not quite on, you know.
Yeah, yeah, that's
sort of,
right.
Implied.
Yeah, and I know what you mean about likenesses from those figures from back in the 60s and 70s. Did you say that there were action figures based on the Waltons?
Yes, that, there are.
I think that those should have maybe been called no action figures, or because I'm telling you that. Well, I won't get to. I won't say a whole lot more. I think I've said enough.
Mikko picked up some pretty strange licenses back in the day. They did some based on like the Love Boat.
Oh man,
they did MASH figures. You know, I mean. There were some strange things getting figures back in the day.
Yeah, that was a peculiar choice. And the Love Boat, other than you know, the handful of people who were on board, they had it was one of the a vehicle for guest stars every
Absolutely,
week. I
yeah.
think Sonny Bono was on, you know, at least once a month when that show was on. But anyway, we digress. But what I'm hearing you say is that, and Kenner was a toy company that was around when I was a kid. I grew up in the 60s, and they made chemistry sets and science toys. But it sounds like not only are they doing things like $6 Million Man, but they're copying that same style. I'm convinced that baby boomers are all about just recreating their childhoods and anything in that style. I think that's the demographic that they're really going after, not so much children to play with. I mean, what kid nowadays has ever seen the $6 Million Man?
Right, right.
So it sounds like everything old is new again. And you mentioned Funko, and I saw that. I was looking through the gallery photos on your website, and there's a lot of very familiar stuff. But Funko is not a company I'm familiar with, and I don't know if you're a Simpsons devotee, but there's an episode where Lisa and Bart invent a toy, a Christmas toy called Funzo, and that's exactly what I thought of when I saw Funko. Tell us about them.
So Funko, they're a company out of Seattle, and like I mentioned earlier, they did originally they were just sort of a bobblehead company. And they picked up a lot of licenses. They did a lot of old, like, you know, old advertising icons, you know, like they would do, like, the Kip's Big Boy or Bob's Big Boy, depending on where you live, you know, cereal icons, you know, and they just picked up all these things. And then they started doing some, like, just specialty runs, small runs for specific stores or retailers, like they did a kangaroo for the Outback Steakhouse. And,
oh, man.
It was kind of amazing because they were all these unique sculpts. They were some very small runs, and they were really successful with them. People really liked them. And then this other gentleman, Brian, came in and bought them and started turning them into something a little different. And they started doing this, what they call pop vinyl, which are these very stylized, kind of little squatty figures. You know, the facial features are almost non-existent, just sort of these big black eyes. They started with Star Wars doing those, but they have snatched up almost every license possible to do these pop vinyls. I mean, it's everything from, you know, like Sons of Anarchy to Game of Thrones to Star Wars to Marvel to DC to, you know, 66 Batman. I mean, the the list goes on and on and on, just how much stuff they've been able to do. And it's great for them because along with that, you know, you have the license, but you don't have to pay for the likeness rights because it's so stylized.
Sure.
So you have a lot more sort of mobility and kind of get a lot more bang for your license buck this way. So they've been doing that, and they've been doing these really stylized, like, blind box figures for Game of Thrones and Walking Dead and a lot of the old sort of horror icons. But now just with them taking over Reaction, they also announced that they were going to get more into the action figure game. So they, along with Reaction, they're doing what they're calling Funko Legacy, which mm-hmm. are the 6-inch sort of super detailed, really articulated figures. And the first license they announced was Game of Thrones, and the first wave of those are out right now at Barnes & Noble store. They're exclusive to them for 1 month, and then they're going to go wider. They're also doing Magic the Gathering, Firefly. I'm trying to think what else they announced for that up front, but it's a brand new game for them, but I think they're going to be very, very successful with that because they already have all the licenses. So what they're going to be able to go after and do, for instance, people forever have been wanting a figure of the Rocketeer from Disney's movie in the original Dave Stevens comic. Disney's always wanted a tremendous amount of money for that license. They somehow think it's hidden gold or something, and no one's been able to crack that license and getting that. Well, they've got the Rocketeer because they have all these Disney Funko Pops that they've done, and they did a Rocketeer, one of those. So there's going to be a 3¾-inch Reaction Rocketeer figure and a 6-inch Legacy figure, which I think a lot of people are excited about because I think there's hardly been any merchandising for Rocketeer ever, and that's always been kind of a white whale for a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, those licenses, Walking Dead and Rocketeer, Batman from the 60s, those are a lot more appealing than MASH or the Waltons. But if I were going to buy or invest in the potential future value of these items as collectibles, there's two that jump out at me. And one that I'd buy are the DC comic figures, and the mm-hmm. other, if they've started coming out with them, and it's sort of a question inside of a question, are the new Star Wars figures for the next Star Wars movies. Any thoughts around hedging your future investments around collectibles with those two?
Well, so, you know, I'm a lifelong DC fan, so, you know, I've bought the Justice League in every single scale, every single style, hundreds of times over. So I'm a big mark for DC Comics. I just love that. And also Star Wars, you know, I was one of those kids that got the original Early Bird set, and I've been collecting Star Wars ever since. And we know right now, of course, that Star Wars was picked up by Disney and that there's more movies coming. So right now we're in this sort of strange transition period between the old films and what will be the new film. So I think, you know, normally when we see that sort of strange tail end transition things, that's where people sort of stop and wait for what's next.
Yeah.
So you can see some good investment in that, in what they sort of, they call the tail end figures of waves and lines and stuff. So I think that's a good possibility. The other thing that I heard at Toy Fair, one of the next big Marvel movies coming out is Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, cool.
Which is kind of the first foray into the Marvel space universe. And it's got kind of a different tone than some of the other Marvel movies, a lot more fun and funny. You know, there's a talking raccoon, a guy that's like a big tree, stars Chris Pratt from Parks and Recreation. And that's going to be a really fun movie. But I think Hasbro, who has the master toy license, is still a little unsure of how people are going to take that film just because it is so different. It's not one of the big names like Thor or Iron Man.
Right.
So I've heard they're sort of hedging their bets on how much of that product they're going to make. So I think initially that'll be a good investment.
We had a news item on the show, I guess, last week about a Star Wars action figure that was the medical droid from the from The Empire Strikes Back that sold for 7,000 British pounds at auction. It was originally, I think, a $7 item back in 1980. That's a pretty good return.
Yep.
Now, granted,
that's
it was
a nice return.
Yeah, it was in great shape, and it had never been opened, and there's no wear on the package or anything, but if something as obscure as, and I think that medical droid is on camera like barely a minute.
Yes.
I think I'm not going to wager my retirement fund on it, but I've got a pretty good idea. I'll be picking up some of those items. Let's talk about you and your website, just to kind of circle back for a moment, and your interest in writing. How did that all come together with your action figure website?
Well, I don't think what year it was. It initially started sometime in the mid to late 90s. I had moved out to California and Los Angeles around 96, so I started going to San Diego Comic-Con in earnest in 97. And I was still, you know, there was maybe a two-year period in my life where I didn't collect stuff in high school because, you know, got really interested in girls, but then it was like the Tim Burton Batman and Batman animated.
It's always a girl that interferes with our fun.
That's right. And Star Trek The Next Generation, and when toys for that started coming out, I was right back into the game. So it occurred to me that, you know, when you think about collecting back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, all this pre-internet, you just never knew what was coming out until it showed up in the stores. And there were some magazines out there. There was Toy Shop, which was, you know, sort of a newspaper publication that people put ads in. There was Toe Marts. There was Lee's. But, you know, these were monthly publications that had long lead times. So you never kind of knew when stuff or what stuff was coming out. And I was collecting a lot of the Hasbro / Kenner Batman animated series stuff. And I was like, boy, I wish someone would just, you know, had a lead on that so we could find that sort of thing out. And it sort of occurred to me, it's like, well, why don't you figure that out? And why don't you be that guy? You know, you see the need, go fill that. So I started writing a column on a website that I called The Amazing Justice League of Julius Marx. and just kind of started making contacts with people in the toy industry. And I wrote that for, I don't know, 5 years or so. And then I was like, you know what, I'm doing this for other people. I'd rather just be doing it for myself. So me and a friend who was a web designer and also did some, he was a toy designer for Wendy's Happy Meal toys or kids meal toys. We sat down and kind of hammered out what we wanted it to be, and he built it for me, and that's been Action Figure Insider, and we're coming up on our 9th anniversary. So
congratulations.
And
it's a
it's
a great site. It's just fun to look at, and there's so much good content and lots of great pictures. And I think I mentioned earlier there were 50 different galleries, and they represented over 50 companies and different toy lines, and you have all of those uploaded at the Action Figure Insider website. And I'm going to have to go back and look to see if the Waltons made it into your into your gallery. There were a couple of others that in the time we have left, Daniel, that I wanted to ask you about. And another was, it was Crypt Kitties. I'm not familiar with them at all. Tell us about those.
Well, they're sort of a spinoff. The original granddaddy of that sort of thing is a line called the Living Dead Dolls. And they're put out by a company called They are put out by Mezco Toys.
Okay.
And they've been making those for 16 years. Actually, at this toy fair, they were awarded a certificate from the Guinness Book of World Records as the longest-running horror doll line.
Wow.
So they're celebrating their sweet 16 this year of Living Dead Doll. And so the Crypt Kitties are sort of like that, but they're more sort of baby dolls that that are sort of look evil and are horror devil based.
Like Chucky, maybe?
Well, it's funny you mentioned Mezco specifically has the Chucky license and has made a Living Dead doll of Chucky.
Oh, cool.
So, these are sort of like baby Crypt Kitties are sort of baby dolls gone wrong, whereas Living Dead dolls are dolls, what you would think of as like children's play toy dolls gone wrong.
Okay.
Sort of the older dress-up dolls, I guess.
Maybe they're just misunderstood.
That's right, yes.
Well, I appreciate...
But, the goth got to have dolls, too.
The goth child does indeed need things to play with. So it sounds like there's a toy for everybody. And before we go, Daniel, give us your website and how folks can find you online.
So you can always find me at actionfigureinsider.com. That's where I'm at all the time. We post things daily, multiple things. We've got a lot of good stuff coming up. I've got some more Toy Fair content to still put up. I've got an interview with the president of Funko that's going to be going up in the next day or so.
Oh, cool.
Also, Ashley Wood of 3A. I've got an interview coming up with him. And then also, I do my own podcast, if anyone wants to check that out, called Geek Shall Inherit. And it's a weekly podcast with Jason Lindsay, who is one of the founder of Biff Bang Pow Toys. And we talk about sort of all things pop culture, toys, movies, music, TV, and that can be found at geekshallinherit.com as well.
And all of the above are incredibly informative and entertaining. And I really recommend and commend those to our listeners. And I want to thank Daniel Pickett, also known as Julius Marx, for being on. You have such a good message and present it so well. I really enjoy having you on the show. And thanks for being our first return guest here on The Collector's Show.
It's my pleasure. Anytime. You know me. Anytime anyone wants to talk toys, I'm right there.
I'm sure we'll be in touch again, Daniel. And here on The Collector's Show, I'll have one more quick word right after this. Stand by. Well, that's going to do it for another edition of The Collector's Show. Thanks for being here. Next week, we're going to talk about some new technology that is going to be used in the field of auctions, antique auctions, and collectible auctions. And we're also going to hear about a very mysterious crystal ball. That's right. You're going to hear about Gene Dixon's crystal ball and the incredible amount of money it sold for. You won't want to miss that. Next week on The Collector's Show here on Web Talk Radio. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.